At Matalan, the big sale is now on. Save up to 50% off thousands of women's, men's and kids' fashion, plus homeware too. Head to your nearest store today or shop via the app and online at matalan.co.uk. T's and C's apply. Selected lines only.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth. 2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back.
Gone. Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper here, another Baseball America Draft Podcast. We're getting you ready for the 2024 draft. And this has become a tradition here at Baseball America. I always look forward to it because it's a chance that I get to, we get to connect during the year, but I get to spend some time diving deep into the numbers with my friend, and more importantly for your purposes, CEO of Promana Labs, Corey Patton. I mean, I will give this intro, I'll try to keep it short, but basically we've been working with Corey for years now, going back to a tool called DraftPoint that was amazing. And Corey and I could spend another 45 minutes of this podcast lamenting of how awesome that was, and Jared Jones and guys that it surfaced, that it just did an amazing job. But we're here today because Corey's company also does the Shift tool, which is used in a wide variety of industries. But we at Baseball America are extremely fortunate to be able to use it because it allows you to query databases, work with, you don't have to be a database admin to be able to work with massive amounts of data. Corey, you can explain it better than me, but the most important thing if you're listening to this podcast is Corey's going to be able to explain it to you in the terms of the draft and what teams have gotten out of the draft, because that's what we're looking at today. Is we're looking at what is an average draft class, which teams did really well in the draft, which teams have done not so well, done poorly in the draft in different years and all that. But Corey, to kind of intro it in, I tried to do a very 50,000 feet version of it, but explain to people what, the Shift tool and how we're using it today, if you would.
First of all, JJ, this is the tradition I look forward to every year for Baseball America. The pre-draft podcast, the during the draft stats that come out of our tool, and then the wrap-up afterwards, we get excited about all that, because what our Promana Shift tool allows people to do, like Baseball America, like you, like me, like people on your staff, like the National Hockey League and others, is to be able to ask these deep historical questions just in natural language, the way that you would Google something. And it means you don't have to be a SQL engineer to be able to get deep, complex historical information out of a tool instantly. So while the draft is going on, that's how you see all the stats come up so quickly from our tool, is because we can get to it quicker than anybody else can ask it and answer it. And when it comes to this type of deep draft history, man, the uses are endless. And today I think we're going to get really deep on what you can expect from draft classes, performance, pitchers, hitters, some of the best and some of the worst over the last, 15, 20 years. So I'm really excited about diving in, because I've got the baseball stat head, JJ Cooper, and I've got this tool that can help me kind of close the gap a bit. But with that, JJ, let's jump in.
Let's jump in. And the thing that, as we worked on this, as we put this together, as you mainly put this together, and I tweaked a little bit and all, the thing that's jumped out to me first is this helped answer a question that I actually heard from a, from a front office official a couple weeks ago, who reached out and was like, hey, do you have the info on what is an average draft? What is a What is an expectation where you're like, okay, you have met the expectation, you have exceeded it, you have failed to reach it? And I've actually just posed that question now to the staff. I'm going to be interested to see what the staff thinks, what their answer is. But kind of just asking the question of, okay, in a normal draft year, how many hitters reach the majors? What's the average per team? Like, so if you had one hitter reach the majors from a draft, I would assume that that's a bad draft. But what about if you got five to reach the majors out of that draft? Is that a all-time draft? Is that an average draft? Is that a mediocre draft? And we can kind of give that answer here. Yeah, and one of the things that jumps out to me, Corey, is that number is probably a little bit lower per team than what a lot of people would expect, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, because when you look at the actual number of players drafted each year, everybody gets excited about their draft class. Everybody sees hope springs eternal, right? Well, sadly, MLB is cruel in that you only get a very few of those players will ever actually get a swing in the show. I mean, they'll get an at bat, okay? And honestly, it's really the average going back between, say, the turn of the century, 2000 and 2015, because at this point we can gather some good data about their productivity, and they've had a chance to matriculate through the minor leagues to actually show whether they can make it to the big league or not. It's about two hitters per draft class. That is insane when you think about it. And there were 40 rounds for a lot of years too. And so two of them, right? And I think it's really interesting that
50
the average
in some
number,
cases.
two, oh, 50 even so, but only two players per draft class make it there. And we can dive into some of the stats, but JJ, was that unexpected on your side?
Oh, that was less than I expected to when I to be honest, so how we had this set up originally, shift, it just said showed the average. And I'll put it this way, I immediately went to like, okay, I've got to do an error check on that to make sure that this is accurate. So the first thing I did was okay, show me just the total number of hitters, so that okay, because again, when we're averaging by divided by 30, is that 74? Is that 46 or whatever? And so you find that like in 2000, 72 position players reached the majors out of that draft. In 2001, 71. But you can go down, like there are years where that number goes down. There are years where that number's in the 60s. There's 2014, that number is 50 so far. Now, again, it's 2014. Maybe there's a 29-year-old, 28-year-old who still is yet to make, but you're probably about right there that that's kind of end up being 50, 51, 52, 53. 50 big leaguers, big leaguers. And that means if you came up on September 15th, you stood in the box, you went 0 for 1, and then you were sent back to the minors, that's a check mark there. So, and it really was surprising to me to see this. So that, okay, I mean, I hate to pour a bucket of cold water, but as you're watching your team's draft this, this coming up, the Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, we hope that a lot of these guys succeed. We root for prospects to succeed. But if you see your team take a position player in the first round and a position player in the second round, and let's say take one in the fourth and the fifth and the sixth, two of those and the entirety of the rest of their draft make the big leagues, that's normal. That's average. Did it surprise you as Corey? I mean, like to me, that just jumped off, that jumped off the page to me.
Well, yeah, and I think that the key here is that we put into the tool drafted and signed, which is a big deal. A lot of teams would take future big leaguers in the super late rounds, just take a flyer on them, and then they go back to school. And so that doesn't really count into our calculus here as well. So I thought it surprised me. There were a couple of teams that during that 2000 to 2015 era, which were above average, the Cubs, Astros, Cardinals, Giants, the Padres, they all averaged three MLB players. So not huge, but they were drafted and signed and position players, right?
But that
The
is
Brewers.
huge.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you can draft above average, then that you're definitely going to put yourself in a better position to succeed. Now, and this also doesn't mean that each of these players that were drafted and signed by that particular team graduated and had their first major league at bat for that team either. Okay, there's movement there as well. So we're just looking at those players that were drafted and signed by a team that ever appeared in a major league game. And I think it's really interesting that we can dive into some of these specific teams who did better or worse, but. Look, don't get your expectations up that every player you sign, you can't wait to see them in that Padres uniform, that Braves uniform.
It's a good point you made. Like to take a more recent draft, but an example of this, if you go back to the 2021 Padres draft, they took Jackson Merrill, with their first pick, who's now one of the best rookies in the National League, for the Padres. They took James Wood with their second pick, and he's now up. He's the number one prospect in baseball, and he's a National. You know, again, that's still a great draft pick, right? We're talking about, we're evaluating here, there's obviously a lot that goes into this. It's drafting a player, signing him, and then developing him. And we're not looking at the development part right now, which plays a role in this. But that leads perfectly into, okay, so let's jump into which teams. Now we're going to look at it a little differently. We're going to look at 2012, 2023, because that's the modern era. And we also looked at this. And I did a little bit of this last year at Baseball America. But Corey, okay, so start us off with, that's 12 drafts there, right? And obviously when the 2023 draft, the 22, the 21, there is much still to be written. The 2012 draft even, that's the Carlos Correa, Byron Buxton draft and all that. Those players, Carlos Correa is an all-star, you know, this year. Those players are still in the middle of their careers. So it's not something where we're saying we've closed the book on this anyway. But so far, what is the average that you can expect from those drafts? For the production.
Well, over the span of that 2012 to 2023 time period, so far it's been teams have pushed about a total of 20 total players, Major League Baseball players, those drafts, total in that time period. So that's your average, right? And the Houston
Astros, and that's position players, right? We're talking about position players right now.
I want to make sure that we're clarifying on this, because baseball is all about deep stats in a very specific level. These are position players drafted and signed by teams, okay? So position players, the Astros that you just mentioned, they have graduated the most position player draftees to the majors during that span with 39 total players, okay? And that's pretty remarkable, because that's 9 more than the closest team behind them. And these two next teams are very interesting, because just because you graduate a player to the majors doesn't mean they've had significant contributions or it contributes to wins either. So the Athletics were second with 30 total players over that time period, and the Pittsburgh Pirates with 29, right? Those Astros, they also have the most games played by position player draftees with over 9,502 games played, followed by the Athletics and then the Cardinals on number of games total played, which is good. When you get a consistent player, that's something you can measure. But I think it's also interesting, JJ, to dig into what is the hitting production that they've gotten out of these position players, not just the number of games they've played, but really which teams draft players that contribute significantly from a statistical standpoint. So I'll dive into a few, and then I want your opinion on a lot of these. So the Dodgers, which, I mean, look, every year they're consistently a top team in Major League Baseball, and they do a lot of their major league players by free agency and acquisition, but they lead all clubs in actual drafted position players and batting average over that span at about 256. Red Sox and Padres are actually next, right there around that number. The Astros that I mentioned earlier have scored the most runs, 4,305. That's best by almost 1,000 over the next closest, the Athletics and then the Dodgers. Houston also has the most hits at 7,661, doubles, triples, walks, and total bases at over 12,757 total bases from those draft classes. So that's pretty significant. And interestingly enough, when I mentioned that sometimes those players that are drafted does not turn into wins by the team that drafted them, the Athletics, good old Oakland, they have the most total home runs during that span with 1,085. So that's kind of interesting.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. What I love about Indeed is how easy it makes it. I post a job. I get the responses. I can search for them, sort them, analyze them all in Indeed. Then I can contact, set up interviews, do it all within Indeed. It makes it easy. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Whether you're playing or coaching a doubleheader or you're a fan in the stands, I don't need to tell you that we're sweating through yet another hot summer. And whether you're playing or watching, hydration is key. Liquid IV is extraordinary hydration for physical endurance, mental clarity, and overall well-being. A single stick of Liquid IV delivers better hydration than water alone, with 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients. I love to hop on my bike and ride at the end of a workday. Before I do, I tear open a stick of Liquid IV, add it to my water bottle, and stir it up. It's that easy. 15 seconds, and you've unlocked better hydration. I'm currently partial to the sugar-free white peach, but there's a flavor for you, whether it's strawberry lemonade, raspberry melon, lemon lime, and it's easy. The sticks fit in your pocket. You can add flavor, electrolytes, vitamins, and nutrients wherever you go. Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022, that's BA2022, at checkout. That's 20% off of your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
At Matalan, the big sale is now on. Save up to 50% off thousands of women's, men's and kids' fashion, plus homeware too. Head to your nearest store today or shop via the app and online at matalan.co.uk. T's and C's apply. Selected lines only.
So I also ran a runs created on this, and the same thing, because, you know, to try to look at it like the totality of total contribution, Astros are clearly at the top. Now, we should note, again, there is also a component of this of where you draft, right? The Astros drafted at the top of the draft in 2012. They drafted near the top of the draft in 13. They, you know, they had multiple top five picks in the Bregman Tucker year. This is the team that drafted, you know, you're going to get the most production from the earlier drafts for this, because this is something that's that is accumulating, it's cumulative. And so the fact that the Astros hit it out of the park in the early years of this draft does stand out. But at the same time, there were other teams that picked around them who didn't come close to matching that kind of production. The Astros, so what I'm saying with this is I look at this, don't look at this and say, oh, that's just because they tanked and they had the top picks. No, there's a lot of really good work that was done there. But I do think also with the A's, yes, this A's team now and the A's franchise is not in an enviable position, and is basically, you know, on the getting ready to move to Vegas, and they've alienated their fans and all that. But that said, if you look at these early year drafts by the A's in the bonus era, the draft bonus pool era, 2012, 2013, 2014, it's not shocking when you see that they drafted Matt Olson, 47th pick overall, 2012. They drafted Sean Murphy. They drafted Addison Russell. They drafted Max Muncy, was in that same 2012 draft, 5th round. Like, this is a team that hit on a ton of really productive. Daniel Robertson was in that 2012 draft. Ramon Laureano, they've drafted. Like, there's a lot of players that you look at and you go, okay, once you kind of dive in on it, it's like, no, they did a really excellent job. It's not surprising that they had that many home runs when you look at it after you kind of dive in a little bit more. Now, let's flip it.
Yep.
We're not all here for, you know, just to bring the sunshine. You know, we're going to pour some rain on this as well. Okay, position player wise, Corey, who jumps out the other way?
Well, it's interesting because, again, we talk about what is the actual effect on what draft, on the players that you draft. And I think it's interesting to look at some of the just the not so consistent teams that draft, and then they've all had World Series. Okay. They've won World Series during the span. The Braves have graduated. The Atlanta Braves have graduated the fewest position players to the majors during that time period, with only 10 between 2012 and 2023. All right. Followed by the Red Sox with 11 and then the Marlins with 14. All right. So Red Sox have a World Series in there. Braves have a World Series in there, right? You know, the Nationals have the fewest games played by draftees with about 1,092, followed by the Tigers and then again with the Braves. So, I mean, JJ, what's your thoughts on that?
So the surprising number is 10 position players for the Braves. Now, the Braves have gone pitching heavy, I would say, in some ways. And when you produce a Ronald Acuna, an Ozzie Albies and all on the international side, that also plays in. But, you know, again, now, the other thing about this is there's quantity and there's quality. You know, quantity-wise, they've been very poor. Quality-wise, Austin Riley has been incredibly valuable for them. Michael Harris has been valuable for them. This is not a team that hasn't produced big league regulars and stars in some cases. The Nationals, we wrote about this a little bit last year. There is no happy story in the Nationals draft when it comes to position players. Like, you can't look here and say, oh, but they've had these players who actually are really good. They just haven't had many of them. No, they have had what you could basically say is almost no production. Now, we'll see if that changes, you know, because they do have a, you know, these, the 2012-2013 drafts are kind of in the barn. The 2021, 22, 23, let's see if a Brady House, guys like that can kind of turn this around. But the other thing that I would just say is like, but if you look at it and you say, okay, what have they produced so far? The answer is, I mean, just to be honest, not much on the position player front. They're the ones who, if you said, who has had the most trouble drafting and drafting and developing, because I think those all very much do play together. But if you said drafting and developing, who's had the most trouble? That's the answer. I don't think that there's even it's not even like a like we're gonna if you find this interesting, we're gonna have a story up at Baseball America that kind of looks at this. And if you just I plotted out those runs created. And you have the Astros, you want to be at the top, and they're kind of at the very top of this curve. And then it looks kind of like what I would say is a normal distribution, right? Like you see kind of a steady slope, and then you look at the bottom, and then you have to kind of wait, and you kind of scroll the camera over, and you keep kind of scrolling the camera over, and then you find the Nationals sitting there at the very bottom. So it's not, they have to do better drafting and developing position players. I think they know that they have to do better. Drafting
I'll give you some backup on your context there. They've scored 354 runs, total runs with position players over that span, and that's the worst in MLB by over 400 runs. Okay. Yeah. They also, Washington position player draftees have also had the fewest hits, fewest doubles, fewest triples, fewest home runs with only 54 total. Next closest team in that during that time has 205. Fewest walks, the fewest total bases. I could go on.
But think of it this way. They have 54 total home runs for every position player that they have drafted and signed from 2012 to 2023. Now, we just rattled off about the Astros, and it's like, okay, well, Carlos Correa has easily topped that by himself, and Kyle Tucker has easily topped that by himself, and Alex Bregman has easily topped that by himself. We talk about the A's, and it's like, okay, Matt Olson and Sean Murphy, and I mean, heck, Ramon Laureano and Max Muncy, and I think Daniel Robertson may have gotten there. Like, that's, that really does jump out on the position player side. But we're not going to forget the pitchers. We want to make sure that we do this on both sides. And I've got good news, national fans. It gets a little better. As we get to this. So Corey, okay, let's start with 2012, 2023 signed draftees. What's the average that you get as far as pitching was out of that 12 years span?
Yeah, total. I mean, teams, there's more pitchers. There's, bullpen, they're starting, there's middle relievers. There's just more opportunity, I think. So it doesn't surprise me that the total amount of during that span of pitchers for the average team is about 29 that they've graduated over that span, which is, makes sense. It's more than position players. It's a little bit easier to get up and get a couple of innings of work, right? But I thought that was something that made sense to me. Now, what was interesting was you look at the teams and you say, okay, the teams that have done best so far with that during that time period is the Yankees. Okay, the Yankees have graduated the most pitching draftees in the majors during that span. They've pushed 39. to the majors, which, you know, that's 10 more players. And again, we'll get to the productivity here in a minute, but that's a lot of players that have come through their farm system that they have built up to major league caliber to actually get a couple of innings of work, right? And it's not shocking that they've been very productive at a major league level. Dodgers, 38, right behind them. And then a couple of interesting teams, Mariners, Royals, and Rangers, all tied with 36 apiece, put into the majors during that time frame. So
that doesn't shock me. And again, as you said, this one's even a little trickier because you are talking about teams also use pitchers differently up and down. Okay, yeah. We're going to bring this guy up for a week. We're going to send him down. Yep. That counts and all that. Corey, like the Yankees, like they've gotten a lot of guys to the big leagues. The Mariners also jump out to me because they've gotten a lot of volume out of the guys they've gotten to the big leagues, which is, I think, also very important.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that they're, look, again, pitching is tough, and everybody needs, you can never have too much pitching. And when the Mariners have drafted, built, trained, and then promoted folks up to get innings of work, that's a huge advantage to having to find out, having to stretch pitchers where they could just bring in fresh arms that they've actually built and matriculated through their farm system, right? And so they actually have had the most games pitched by their draftees with over 3,000, followed, interestingly, by the Tigers and the Padres next. But what is really interesting is kind of when we dive into, again, what's the actual effectiveness of those pitching classes and those teams that draft well. And the Cardinals are notoriously good for that. Like they just do this year in and year out, and their scouting team is amazing, right? So their pitching draftees have the most wins during the span, about 462, followed by the Padres and then the Blue Jays right behind them. So they've got pitchers that are putting up quality starts and quality innings, right? They also have the most strikeouts with almost 7,000 strikeouts, the Cardinals do, followed by the Padres with almost 1,000 less. And then the Mariners, you know, at around 5,000, 5,500 or so. The most saves at 275 belong to the Mariners pitching draftees. So they're not just drafting front-end starters, but they got closers that they're looking at as well. And then the most complete games, the Padres had 11, which is kind of interesting to me. And
then I will say, though, we're talking about 11. So you want to talk about the smallest of numbers here.
I understand, but it's not really, it's a different game style. I mean, complete games used to be a thing and not so much anymore, right? So you have to figure out what you're drafting. And those are kind of outliers now at 11, I guess.
But the thing that jumps out with the Cardinals here is, to me, is again, there's volume and there's quality to that volume. And if you say, okay, so, you know, so kind of who are we talking about? You know, we have the thing with the Cardinals is that jumps out is they've kind of hit on guys multiple years here. There was Michael Wacha, who's, you know, had a very solid career, still pitching. You know, you have Marco Gonzalez, who they turned around and traded, but has had a very solid career. Jack Flaherty, Luke Weaver, you know, there's a number of productive pitchers. It feels like the best way I can put it, and this is extremely hard to do, but the Jordan Hicks in 15, this is a team, Ryan Helsley in 15, like this is a team that was adding a quality one or two or more pitchers almost every year in the early parts of this study. Which, again, we said, if you are talking about this, if you hit the ball out of the park with your 2021 draft, like I talked about that Padres draft, it's not going to show up that much yet, right? Jackson Merrill is starting to accumulate his numbers. If you hit it out of the park with Paul Skenes that the Pirates did, obviously, he's arguably one of the best, if not the best player picked, pitcher picked in one of these drafts as far as who would you want to have, but he has less than half a season in the big leagues now. That's not going to give you nearly the production for this cumulative total as someone like a Marco Gonzalez. You'd rather have Paul Skenes and Marco Gonzalez, but Marco Gonzalez has been around for quite a while. Jack Flaherty has been around for quite a while. But the Cardinals' ability to hit on this year after year after year really does stand out. And that's something where, you know, it's one thing to have a draft where you really hit, but to do this, to pile it up year after year really is what kind of gives you that base that puts you in a really great situation to succeed. And then we were giving the A's a lot of praise on the hitter side. And now we're going to kind of flip it because the A's haven't produced a ton of pitchers, right, Corey?
No. I'm not going to give them a lot of praise on their selection for pitching talent, but they and it's not really just the talent, it's just the quantity. So the A's and the Phillies have graduated the fewest pitchers to the majors with 19 each. But we just talked about the Cardinals, quantity or quality, and it's mostly quality, not quantity with the Cardinals, because they actually have graduated the next fewest with only 23 pitchers actually seeing major league action. So with that, they have put up all those stats I mentioned earlier that were excellent with the quality that they chose of their pitchers, right?
Zach Gallen, I should also throw in there. You know, again, they didn't get the benefit from Zach Gallen, but he's kind of the star of their 2016 class, like, which, and he's been truly a star. So like, yeah, you would rather, I would say that you would rather with the pitchers, you would rather have quality than quantity. Yeah. They both have some values, but yeah, but quality, and that's where the Cardinals stand out. The flip side of that is that's not necessarily where the Pirates, the Astros even, do jump out here. Because if you're looking at quantity of games pitched, nope, those teams are at the bottom, right?
Yeah, Pirates have the fewest games by far, with about 1,100, followed by the Astros, and then those Athletics again. So not only are you just not getting games pitched out of your drafty pitchers that you're pitching, you're not getting a lot of production out of them either, and not a lot of wins. So you could see where there's a correlation there, I think.
I will say again, we're looking at this study, we're going up to now, but I think if we did this, not win, Corey, we're booking it right now. When we do this study again, when we're recording this podcast before the 2034 draft, I will say that the Pirates, what they're doing right now is going to put them in very good stead at that point when we're studying it. Because again, they produced Paul Skenes, they've produced draft point darling Jared Jones, they're producing, Bubba Chandler, who should be, so this is always a snapshot in time. And you do see, like, right now, that it's flipped. The Pirates, I would say, at a time, they were really better at producing position players than pitchers. Now they're producing pitchers, I would say, better than position players. But it does, again, it does jump out. And if you say, well, why, what's been some of the trouble for the Pirates? Not producing those kind of rotation anchors, those closers, things like that, is something that kind of does get in their way. That has gotten in their way, I should say. But we also, again, we started with this and we're going to come back to it now. Okay, that's the snapshot in time. Mm-hmm. Then we go to, like, we could go back to 1960 if we want, 65, but we're not going to go that far back. But we are going to say, okay, let's look at this now, though, 2000 to 2015. And that's kind of because that's a little bit firmer in the firmament now. Like, this is 2000 is in concrete now, right? Zach Greinke was drafted after 2000, right? That we're talking about pretty much there is no one left from the 2000 draft class kicking around. Like, those numbers are done. And even if you get up to like 2005, 2006, 2007, which are some very kind of prominent draft classes, the vast, vast, vast majority of players from those classes are done with their careers at this point. Okay, you still have a Verlander, you have a Scherzer from the late, 2000s drafts that are still around. But these numbers are, you can kind of say, are largely fixed. And now we can look at this and say, okay, let's start back with the position players. First, we touched on it at the start, but we will emphasize, on average, two players, a little over two players per team per year, position players signed, reached the majors, 70, 75, 60, in that range of totality of the entire draft. But okay, on average, what can you expect to get out of a position player class in a year? What's the average we've seen over these, which we can say are relatively now fixed numbers?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's really, again, those two players in the majors, kind of a, you can, let me give you an example. I think we can look at one organization that really stood out during that time period, and I think it's the Braves, because their scouting department was on fire with position players during that time period, where if you look at the average per class production, they led all Major League Baseball in hits per class at about 1,600, doubles, home runs, RBIs, and even total bases per class during that time period. Let me give you a couple of names during that period. Starting out with Adam LaRoche in 2000. Brian McCann 2 years later. Jason Hayward, Freddie Freeman in 07. You know, Austin Riley 2015. Those are some really big names that they hit on and got tremendous production out of them during that class, during that period. And it makes sense that they... the fruits of their labor paid off for the teams that have them now or during that production during the Braves period. So thoughts on that, JJ?
Well, for one, I just to kind of put that in context, basically you're laying out that every year over these drafts, the Braves were adding on average 211 more big league home runs in a draft.
You got it. You got
another 1600 hits per class. And if you look at that and you divide, you compare that to what is the totality of average, basically on most of these numbers, what they were doing over this time is they were getting twice the average production every year. Not one, not they had a draft where they got twice. What we're saying is over this stretch, the Braves were on average producing twice as much offensive production from the players they drafted and signed each year than the average team. That's an incredible advantage. When you talk about it, especially again, this is a 16 draft span. Yeah. So this just every year building up, and again, doesn't mean that every draft that the Braves had is twice as productive, but it does mean that they have the Jason Hayward, Freddie Freeman year, which let's say is three or four times as productive. And then maybe they have the one that's a down year, and then they turn around and they have the Austin Riley year, which again, when we look at this on average, they're producing 1600 hits, 320 doubles, 200 plus 210, 211 home runs, 2,600 total bases per class. Well, that's where you see the value of when you hit on a star, that's what we're talking about. Because by the way, any player who hits that average, we talk about, and that's more than one player in a lot of these classes, but if you draft a player first round, I don't care, 1-1 overall, and they give you 2,600 total bases, 211 home runs, 1,600 hits, you're not going to shake your head and go, oh, we should have gone in a different direction. Maybe there was someone later on who went better than that, but that is great production. And that, I mean, again, they did, they stand out at a different level kind of almost than anyone else when it comes to position players. Now, but Corey, okay, what about, is there a draft class as you looked at this that really jumped out?
Yeah, there's a couple of them. And I think, again, it depends on how many, whether you want the most players or most production. And let's go through both of those, right? So in the 2008 draft, the Padres had nine position player draftees get to the major leagues. And that is just an outlier, right? When two is the average, they had nine that year, right? It wasn't terribly productive nine, though. I mean, the most effective member of that class was Logan Forsythe, who played in about 970 total games. So that's not exceptional.
I would call that trivia almost. Like I'd say, that one's trivia because they got a lot of guys, but they didn't get a ton. Okay.
Not great. Now, you want production, though, that 2009 Diamondbacks draft class, just a standout, just an absolute standout for Major League Baseball games played. They sent seven players, position player draftees to the majors and had a combined 4,497 games played. It included AJ Pollock, Matt Davidson, Chris Owings, Paul Goldschmidt in the eighth round.
That's key.
Pretty good. That 2009 Diamondbacks class also hit 643 home runs. It's the most powerful class during the span, and about 7,000 total bases. So I'd say they did well in that class, JJ.
Ouch. I mean, that will carry you for quite a while. Paul Goldschmidt, hitting on Paul Goldschmidt in the eighth round will carry you for quite a while. without a doubt. I mean, that's kind of true. Okay. But now let's flip it the other way, which is, so, okay, I'll start with this question. Did any class completely strike out? 2000 to 2015, is there any class where you say no position player has done anything?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a couple of stats here on that. Overall, I went back and looked at the numbers, and that's the beauty of Shift, is I can just ask the question. There were 79 team draft classes with only one position player to ever see Major League Baseball action. 79, okay? 10 team position draft classes had only one player see action and less than 10 total games played, okay? There's 10 classes, so I'd say all those are busts. The Tigers in 2009, it's kind of crazy. Their position players drafted and signed. They had one player that appeared in one career game. The 2015 Yankees class and the 2001 Nationals class each produced a total of 0 hits from their position players in those
drafts. So that would have been the Expos, the Nationals / Expos. I think there's still the Expos back then. But so if 2001, that means that that's never changing. That is you did not get a hit.
Not a hit. Not a single hit. A single hit.
And I would say also with this Yankees class, I don't think that that's probably going to change either. As I scan through, there's not really, maybe Isaiah Gillum, I don't know, gets to the big leagues again at some point, but maybe that's, but probably not. That Tigers class, the answer to the trivia question is Daniel Fields. Daniel Fields made it up for one game.
Three at bats.
He did hit one hit, 333. He is a career 333 hitter. But there that is go. But that is you can basically absolutely whiff on position players in a class. And it doesn't happen very often, but it has happened when, again, that does jump out. 10 draft classes where you have one player with less than 10 games played. That is you did not really get any position player production. Okay, so we're moving pretty quick here because we want to get a lot out in a in one pod. Pitching. Yeah. So as you noted when we were looking at the 2012 to 2023, the numbers are a little different here as far as the number making it, because pitchers, teams rotate, especially before we had some of the more rules that we have now, teams would shuffle through relief pitchers one after another. So what is the averages? What are we looking at seeing on the pitching side as far as what is an average class?
Yeah, the average class is about three pitchers will see Major League Baseball action from those that are drafted and signed for them. You can average about 400 games pitched of your total, all your pitchers that are drafted. That's about average per year. Depending on the production you get out of that, they may just, see face a batter or two batters and it counts as a game pitched, right? So of those, I think there are some things that stand out really on that. And the Yankees, Rangers, Blue Jays, they're all above average. They've all sent four pitchers to the Major League Baseball, to MLB during each draft class. That's their average, okay? And that's above average. That's good. So that's, you could see dividends there. The Yankees that I just mentioned there, they saw the most action, averaging about 571 games pitched per draft class. So you're getting some production out of your pitchers that you're signing. The Cardinals, who we mentioned in the earlier segment, again, they do really well drafting arms. They've averaged the most strikeouts per class at over 1,085 per class in strikeouts. And then I think one thing that's not solely dependent on the pitchers, but when you're getting good starts, you usually get, it translates into wins. Cardinals, Rays, and Diamondbacks have averaged the most wins per class with about 70 wins each per class. So there's a bit of a setup on what teams are excelling and drafting pitchers and getting good return on their investments.
No, that does. I mean, again, that what the Yankees done there really does jump out, because you are talking about, there is a quantity and quality, but quantity is a value also in pitching, because you have to fill innings. The best way I can put it is like on the, no one ever says, no one says we ran out of at bats, because there's always, again, you can have less talented players playing, but with pitching, you do hear about, we ran out of, we ran out of pitchers for the innings, because it's 162 games and it's 9 innings a night. And you have to, having guys, even if they're average or fringe average in your production, it really does still kind of stand out. Okay. So am I right in assuming then that, if the Yankees are doing this year after year, are they going to appear when we talk about the best individual draft classes?
Much like that 2009 Diamondbacks class for position players, that 2006 Yankees pitching class is just dominated when you compare it to every other draft class for pitchers during that era. Interestingly enough, that 2006 Yankees draft class has over 3,364 games pitched. The next closest, from one class, the next closest was the 06 Cardinals class, at 1,778 games. That's 1,586 games less than that. So
it's more than double any other class.
More than double any other class. It's just a standout class. I mean, graduating 3 is the average. They graduated 8 that year. And in that class, I'll just reel off some names. Ian Kennedy, Joba Chamberlain, Zach McAllister, Dylan Betances, George Kontos, Mark Melanson, Daniel McCutcheon, David Robertson, all of those. They have the most combined wins, saves, and strikeouts of any class during that time period. So I'd say they had some success with their arms in that draft.
So, okay, now let's provide the little bit of bitter to go with the sweet, which is, did anyone completely strike out on not having a pitcher make it?
Yeah, I will go through some of these. Let's start. There's not a class where at least one pitcher did not see any.
That does impress me that there's not ever. By the way, we do know this when we're doing again that we're already planning out the show notes for the 2035, and I can tell you right now, the Angels 2021 class will win the award for not producing position players, because as you remember, because we were working on this, they didn't draft a position player that year, so they're going to go 0-for. Like, there will be an 0-for because they drafted 20 pitchers, 19 college pitchers, one high school pitcher in 20 rounds. So that will be the 0-for as far as position players. We can look forward. We can book it for our 2034 podcast right now. But I'm sorry, I interrupted. But so, yes, so the no one went 0-for, but some teams did seem like they came pretty close.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the average being three pitchers to make it to the major leagues, if you're sending one, that's not great. 62 draft classes during that time period only had one pitcher make it to the majors. There were 8 draft classes that only graduated one pitcher and pitched in less than 10 career games, so that's not exceptional. But there's just one class that stood out to me. As much as we talk about how well the Astros have done recently in their drafting, that 2005 Astros draft class, only one pitcher drafted and signed that saw MLB action. But here it was. Only one career game, 27 total pitches for that one pitcher, faced 7 batters and gave up 2 runs. So not a super productive pitching draft class in 05 by the Angels.
Okay. I'm putting you on the spot because maybe you don't know, but who was the one pitcher?
We can find that out.
Yes,
you have put me on the spot, and I will find that out for you.
Oh, okay. I know who it is. It's actually a position player. It's a two-way. They drafted Brian Bogusevich, and he was supposed to pitch. Then he switched to hitting, but then he also had pitching in his background. So, you know, he ended up playing basically as an outfielder, but he does have the one game that they got. I mean, that's, by the way, that's just a terrible draft class in general, because that's a draft where they got Bogusevich to the big leagues for 321 games as a position player. And then they got Tommy Manzella for 90 games where he didn't hit. And they got Brandon Barnes for, you know, okay, a decent 484 games as a position player, as an outfielder, kind of a backup kind of guy. And then you said that one game where Brian Bogusevich remembered his days at Tulane and was like, I can pitch for you if you need innings. But so they really, that is as close as you will get to an 0-for, because the only inning they got, I should say, yeah, the only appearance they got is from a guy who was a position player. Although in his case, again, it's a little bit unique because in his case, he was initially a pitcher. It's not something where it's like, this is not a case of taking a pure position player and putting him on the mound. He did get an inning. He did, you know, make an appearance. But that is that's one that if you wonder, again, the things that do jump out about it, it's not that a team can't survive a terrible draft. Any organization can survive a bad draft. But if you do wonder why when we talked about that, those 2012, 13, 14 Astros drafted at the top of the draft. Well, one of the reasons you do that is when you go effectively almost 0-for the 05 draft, then you turn around in the 06 draft and you take Max Sapp and Sergio Perez and Nick Morezzi, They did get Chris Johnson, you know, and they did get Bud Norris in that class. I don't want to say they got no one, but those first names, if you're not a Baseball America nut, you probably don't remember a number of those guys. But they did this year after year at the middle of the 2000s, and that ends up being, you know, they didn't sign anyone that they drafted in 07 in the top 150 picks. They had two guys they drafted in the top 150, no one in the top 100, and they didn't sign them. So when you are wondering, like, well, why did the Astros, why were they so bad in the start, which I know they also tanked when Jeff Lunau came in. He decided, we're going to rip the Band-Aid off. We're going to be bad, but we're also going to get the picks. But the other part of it is they got to being that bad organically, because if you whiff on the draft in 05, 06, 07, year after year after year, we can contrast to the Braves. If you say, why have the Braves been able to have such sustained success? Well, one of the ways you do that is if you're producing 200 home runs, 1,600 hits year in, year out after the draft, when someone, you know, gets old, when someone hits free agency, when you need to make a trade, you always have someone else to plug in.
Yeah.
That really does jump out from, you know, the work that you've done here on kind of putting all this all together.
And I'll put one, what you mentioned something a second ago that I want to add on to. You mentioned about drafting early in the top of the round, you know, top of the first round, and getting productivity out of even your 1-1 or your first 10 picks. You know, how likely is it? I started to do a little bit of research on how likely is it for position players or hitters selected in the top 10 picks to even have 100 career major league hits, just 100 hits. Still only 72%. So even if you dropped a guy 1-1, you may not even make it to the show, but that's 72% of the time. If you draft between 11 and 20, it drops to 63% of the time you'll have a player have 100 career hits or more. And between 21 and 30, even still in the first round, it's down to less than 50% of the time. So you really is incumbent upon you to produce with your top 10 picks that you can. If you have one, you better hit on them.
If you're finding this podcast interesting, I also would suggest go to baseballamerica.com right now, because I did kind of the flip side of this, which is looking at more recent drafts and taking a snapshot, 2022, 2021, 2020, and fits very much what you're saying here, Corey. Like, it jumps out, like, we think of it as, oh, you know, that player didn't turn out to be successful. Well, the draft is not a crapshoot. The one thing I'll say about this is it's not just random. You just hit on it right there. You are seeing a normal distribution. If the draft was random, it would be something where the chances of the 25th pick and the first pick would be very similar, because then it would be like, it doesn't matter. It does matter. But the other thing that does jump out is that being able to hit year after year, there are teams who are able to hit better and there are teams who are not able to hit as well. We just hit on in this, like we talk about the Braves being able to hit year after year makes a difference. And the flip side of that, if you're striking out year after year, you're digging yourself into a hole that is really hard to dig out of. And the best example I would give of that is like, okay, you know, we talk about, like, we didn't talk about a big, you mentioned the D-backs draft, but we also have, like, for combination of position players and pitchers, you have that Angels class, the Mike Trout class, which I would say does go down as one of the great drafts, you know, by a team of all time, because, well, let's start with you get Mike Trout at pick 25.
You can stop there.
Yeah, you can stop there. But you get Mike Trout pick 25 in a draft where you also get Patrick Corbin and Tyler Skaggs and Garrett Richards, the late Tyler Skaggs, I'd say, and then Randall Grichuk. Like, there was just a ton of production from that class. Okay, that's great. Home run.
Yeah.
And then you say, well, why the Angels not win? It's like, because then you look at their 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 drafts. They weren't able to do that again. And, you know, you talked on those averages, like, to give a perspective of it. Mike Trout's not done with his career by any stretch of imagination, but Mike Trout has, you know, has basically 1,500 games, has 378 home runs. Randall Grichuk has 194 home runs from that class. You know, like, so that right there, like, so they've already gotten from just those two guys, and it'll keep going up, but they've gotten almost They'll easily top, thanks to Trout, more than 600 home runs from that class. That's more than, you know, we talked about the Braves averaging 200 and some. But when you look at the grand expanse, being able to do that year after year or close to year after year adds up more than doing it once. You know, it's funny because you can, a draft, hitting on one star, with the thing that jumped out when you did this, that really, one of the things that stands out to me is that you hit on one star in a draft, you had a great draft. Because you look at this, like, again, the average draft produces two position players, 2.2 maybe, 2.3, you know, again, if you want to get a little more precise, but yeah, that's who make it. So when we talk about a draft, like, again, we talk about that Angels draft, they really only had two position players for all we just talked about. Grichuk and Trout, their two first-round picks, are the only two position players they had that year who made the majors. So they got two, but they got two great ones. I mean, well, they got one very productive one. Randall Grichuk is a great pick because when you look at it, 1,200 games, almost 200 homers, great pick. Mike Trout is one of the greatest picks of all time. But the thing that jumps out about this is even when you're talking about a class, it's like, okay, the Braves get Michael Harris. Great draft right there. I mean, that sounds crazy to say, but that is this, the thing that is kind of both impressive and depressing about this, that this, I think, provides a useful context. So thank you, Corey, is we can get very excited on day one, day two, a little bit less, but day three of the draft where you're like, okay, because we should, I'm going to be on a show on Sunday night and we'll be talking about these guys and we're going to project what they could be. But at the same time, this is the bucket of cold water being poured on it that, hey, there's also what they could end up, what could derail them. And there are more, as you said, baseball is cruel. There are more off ramps than there are, you know, throughways, speed, you know, expressways on the way to a big league career where injuries, you know, okay, you can't hit, you know, you get to double A, you can't hit. You know, in some cases, like, hey, you know, the player just comes to realize this is not my life's work. Whatever it is, there's so many different ways that you could end up getting derailed from being a big leaguer that again, 20-round draft, you get basically, if you get two position players and three pitchers out of it, great. But that's the average, right? That's basically what we're looking at here.
It is the average.
Who reach it. So absolutely, if you look at those numbers, and again, we're looking at numbers that are over 40 and in some cases 50 round drafts. I think actually when I started, it was still on at BA in 2002. I think it was still the, you can draft as long as you want, which I will never ask for that to come back because that was painful. But when you look at, you know, those years, though, you're still saying, like, okay, like nowadays with 20 round draft, if you draft 20 players and 1/4 of them reach the big leagues for a day, very kudos, well done. Now, what you're trying to avoid is having one position player reach the big leagues for one game, which we have seen happen. But anything else that we haven't covered, you know, here, no, reached the hour mark?
I just want to kind of, when people are watching this draft and those that are maybe baseball stat heads, maybe understand the whole draft, and some that may not be and just kind of tuning in to see it. Day two, I think when you look at the stats, as you talked about the curve of distribution, it's interesting in the bonus era to see how that goes back up in rounds 10, 11, and 12. And dips off in the after round five, and you would think it would be linear, that the higher the draft round, the better performance of the players. But it's because the bonus pool opens up. And JJ, you could talk for another 27 minutes on that. But when you look at that percentages, and that's the really cool thing that I think we could do a whole show on, is look at the distribution curve of productivity by rounds opening up on day two at the top of the class versus the end of day one. Or the end of day two, actually, sorry.
Day two versus day three, because the difference being is that you have a penalty for failing to sign a fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, well, first round too. But like anything up to the 10th round, you are in a situation where if you fail to sign the player, you lose the bonus pool allotment. Mm-hmm. Now, but if you sign that player, and we see the senior signs really kind of flip in the sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th round, you sign a guy for 10,000, 25,000, whatever, you can then use that savings and shift that to your 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th rounders. So what you do see is when it comes to in the draft, the bonus pool allotment is not a one-to-one correlation with perceived talent. So let's start with that, which I think is useful for people to realize. This is like, because there's leverage. Like if you're a high school player, you have more leverage than a college player because you can go to college or you can sign. If you're a sophomore, if you're a draft eligible sophomore, you have more leverage than a junior. If you're a junior, you have much more leverage than a senior. If you're a senior with no remaining eligibility, you do not have much leverage. So it's not a perfect correlation of talent distribution. There may be a senior who is viewed as more talented than a high school player, more potential of a big league career, who gets 1/5, 1/10 of the bonus because of the differences of leverage. But that being said, what you hit on here is a key point, which is okay, I may like this player better than I like this player. I think this player is going to be a role player who probably flames out in AA, and I think this player could be a big league starter. I'm taking player B in the 11th round because I don't know if I'm going to assign him. I may end up signing him for $750,000 or whatever with the money I saved drafting player A in the 6th round and paying him $20,000. But I do it that way, and that's where you see this talent distribution get a little bit wonky. The other thing that jumped out to me when I did this draft study that jumps out is 2020 was the weird draft. It was a 5-round draft, but it was also the COVID draft where there weren't games. The college season, the high school season, all that shut down in March, and then we had the draft. And so you would say, okay, it's almost like an experiment to see, so how important is the playing of the draft year? And the answer is, I would say very important, because in a draft where, and by the way, if I remember correctly, I believe everyone in that draft class signed. So that was a year that did not have the distribution of, oh, well, you're taking them in the 3rd round because they're senior signs. And then you're thinking that none of that kind of existed almost in that one. And the 5th round is 100%, I can guarantee already, is going to be a more productive class than the 3rd round. You've had 10 big leaguers from that 5th round already. You've had one from the 3rd round. And what I would say with that is we didn't see a normal distribution that year. And if you say, well, why didn't you? It's because teams were working with much less information, much less data, much less scouting information than they normally had, which did make the distribution, I would say, to some extent, more random, which I find fascinating because, you know, like as we look at this year after year, you do expect kind of you hit on it. You expect kind of a linear curve, but you know, like, okay, then you get to middle of day 2, 5th through 7th, 10th round, you're going to drop off, and then it'll spike again for the 11th, 12th, 13th, and then tail off again. That 2020 draft, that weird draft, is not that way. And you look at it, Spencer Strider might be the best player from that class. He went in the 4th round. You look at that 5th round again. You've got like 4 big league starters out of the 5th round of that class. And you look at the 3rd round of that class, 1 big leaguer right now, and I bet you probably won't end up with more than 3, 4, maybe 5 future regulars out of that entire round. We've already got that from the 5th round.
Yeah. No, I think that 2020 is an interesting article for you to dig in on, because I think it's going to be a wildly interesting class to see what metrics people did to evaluate talent going into that when there were no games being played. And I think you're going to see some teams that were able to do things with interpersonal communication and ferret out the players versus those that relied strictly on Statcast of past talent that wasn't being played at the same time. It's a very interesting way that the scouting rooms had to adjust. And who adjusted the best? We'll see the dividends being played out right now and over the next 3 years.
The thing that already does jump out with that, though, is the Rangers drafting Evan Carter, which was kind of the surprise, the shock of the draft. But that was a case of them doing a better job than pretty much everyone else, because they were able to see that talent who took a step forward in workouts and all that spring. And they take a guy in the 2nd round who at the time was like, what, who, you know, and then he ends up being already one of the slam dunks of the class. Like if you redrafted it now, no way he gets out of the top 5, you know, top 10, no chance he goes beyond the top 10. and that's where it was just a crazy draft. Corey,
yes, go ahead, JJ. Sorry,
I was going to say we could do this. We could do this all day, but you also have a you are a very busy man. I'm very fortunate that I got an hour of your time. Thank you for doing this. If all this is interesting to you, this go to baseballamerica.com. There's going to be a lot of this data I'm putting together thanks to the wonderful shift tool that makes it very easy to do. I'm going to put a lot of this up at baseballamerica.com so you can dive into it. If you want to dive deeper, we'll kind of pull out some of these draft classes. We'll put this, the podcast will be there, but it'll also will be effectively interactive because you'll be able to look at this and see some of these classes yourself, some of the data as well, if you want to dive into it more.
Yep. But, and all day on Sunday, all night during the draft, and on Monday and Tuesday, I'll be pushing out some nuggets of information that at Primano Labs, our Twitter handle. Also, JJ will probably be reposting quite a few of those.
Absolutely.
And throughout the day, we'll kind of do a wrap up article probably as well on some of the nuggets that came out of this draft that are unique. So look forward to doing a lot more of this work together with you, JJ, over the next week.
100%. Again, when you talk about just the ability to kind of work with big data here in a very simple way, like one of the things I know we will do because we've already started working on it is okay, there are teams that have kind of proclivities to certain areas. And so we can basically look at this and just say, okay, so what teams have a affinity to a certain area for first round picks, right? Like, and you would, I'll just give a little teaser on this because we'll look at this after the draft, but like, okay, the Braves and Georgia. Well, woohoo. Thank you for sharing that. That's something that's obvious. What about the Royals in Texas? Would you have ever have gotten that? And that's something that, again, the shift tool just pulled out. By the way, if you look over, just take a quick look at, 2000 to present from Texas for the Royals. They go to Texas for their first round picks a lot. And those are the kind of things.
That area scout's getting some work.
And again, not that Texas is not a hotbed, but it is something that does jump out how often they've taken. And by the way, they're doing pretty well with, they've done pretty well with that in many cases as well. But thank you for the time, Corey. This was great. And again, check it out. Corey was with Primano. No, not with. Corey is CEO of Primano Labs. You can check them out. But also you can check out, we will have shift tool information for this story at baseballamerica.com. And then we will be posting it on social all through the draft and then doing a wrap up of useful, interesting things we have found with the shift tool after the draft as well. For Corey, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.